If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder.
Mike Ray, former cop and body double for a world-famous action star, was ready to put show business behind him when he was asked to do one last favor for Hollywood's hottest new actress. All he had to do was find her the necklace from a forgotten film and not get killed in the process. From the insane house parties of Malibu and the reclusive mansions of Beverly Hills to the scorching California desert, Mike finds himself in a scandal involving one of the world's most eccentric billionaires, the Nevada Mafia, and a sadistic Estonian porn kingpin. To find the necklace, he'll have to blow the lid off a secret buried in the California desert that stretches back to ancient Egypt, with an irresistible client who won't take no for an answer. If the job doesn't get him killed, she just might. Hollywood Pharaohs by Andrew Main has been described as a fast-paced love child of The Big Lebowski and Indiana Jones. Find out why readers have made this book one of the best reviewed in all of Amazon. It's Hollywood Pharaohs by Andrew Main, available for only $2.99 on the Amazon Kindle store. Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, ghouls and goblins, welcome to Weird Things, the podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Yeah, everybody, who's ready to get weird?
Speaking of weird, Mr. Brian Brushwood.
I already took my pants off and I'm wearing a cactus. That's how weird I'm feeling.
Fantastic.
No one's going to say where he's wearing the cactus.
Bro, that would be...
Because we saw him stand up and we didn't see no cactus.
Can't a man wear a cactus without his boyfriends making fun of him? How come dudes don't call their guy friends boyfriends the way girls call their girlfriends
some
girlfriends?
Some do.
All right. Well, yeah. Well, boyfriend.
There's been a lot of guys I've met that have boyfriends here in San Francisco. Yeah.
Well, boyfriends, let's get weird.
Yes, swear. What are you talking about? Anyhow, Breeder, let's get going. We thought today we would throw it open to the listeners, and we put out a request. And if you're listening live right now, and you would know that because you were listening live, you could still send a question to questions@weirdthings.com. And we're going to try to go through and analyze and answer some of these and put our brains together and give you the full force of our intelligence.
Absolutely. And laughing. Let me just remind everybody that we do record live on Monday nights. So Monday nights on weirdthings.com. If you want to watch the show, you're only a listener, this is the time to do it.
Usually around 9 p.m. Eastern sometimes.
Yeah, give or take. If you follow our tweeters, then you can know when we're going to throw an audible at you, which is not a sponsor of this podcast.
So I'm going to go in order that they came in. The first one was a magic question, I guess, because both Brian and I do magic and Justin works for iTricks and says, could you make an effect where you take your facial features off one by one?
Oh, my God.
We know, remember, McBride, I think, did something like that. We'd wipe off his makeup. Jeff McBride's a really great magician who does a thing with this like kabuki-style makeup.
He was the first also to really kind of bring that kiss over-the-top face makeup element to it. And he did this whole thing with masks, each mask representing a different aspect of the human condition. And there's one part where he goes through all these masks and the guy keeps peeling off, the character keeps peeling off these masks, and there's always another one underneath, and you could tell he's becoming agitated. And at some point, you know, he's visually shaking, trembling as he peels apart these masks. And then at some point, he reaches into the eye sockets and pulls out these two red handkerchiefs. It's like he's it's very visually disturbing as he looks to pull out his eyeballs.
He would do a thing where he would then like take the makeup off and wipe it off. Then he would like, I think he'd wipe it too much and his face would be completely blank.
Yeah, yeah.
So look up, anyone who wants to see some cool, look up Jeff McBride. Very cool stuff.
But let me just say, I mean, from my perspective with magic, like anything's possible. You just need to think of the right method, right? Like it's all about framing expectations and method, but anything's possible.
I mean, that's true, but yes, from a mechanic standpoint, but to me, that's not the hard part. The hard part is thinking up a reason to remove your faces, the pieces of your face. You know, like that to me is always the real conundrum, is the storytelling element of there needs to be a reason where this can be a surprise and yet make sense once you see it happen. Because otherwise, if there's no context, if you could sweep someone up in the story, they're way more apt to forgive the mechanics of how a magic trick is done. But if you can't, then when it's just naked mechanics, so many times it becomes easy to figure out.
Yeah, absolutely. If there's a reason, it's because there's a conflict you're trying to resolve, and then the it happening seems like almost like it wasn't predestined.
Yeah, yeah.
Say, I'm going to make a car float, and you go make a car float.
It's like, eh, so? But you tell a story about, you know, how bad your grandfather wanted to win a car. And then all of a sudden the car shows up.
Let's just say theoretically you were to do that.
And theoretically the license plates match randomly selected numbers from the audience. Your brain explodes. You're like, this is true magic happening in front of my eyes, and you want to cry.
Okay, but wait a minute. Let me ask you this, though. If to go with a famous performer who may or may not have an effect that Brian just described. with David Copperfield's flying, that was him saying, I've always wanted to fly. I'm going to fly. And then he flew. Right.
But there's an escalation there, too, in the idea that it starts off where he doesn't just float. All of a sudden, you're like, all right, he's flying. Then it goes into, well, I'm going to have them pass hoops over me. OK, right, yeah. Now I'm going to go into a box and I'm going to keep elevating how amazing this is, rather than just sort of a normal kind of fly where you just sort of float.
But
I'm going to pick somebody else up and fly with them.
But even then, he didn't just fly because he could. He flew because it was a childhood dream, and he spends what little dialogue there is before the flying wrapping the spectator's mind around every vision and fantasy they had as a kid of being able to fly. And it's like, and so he sets the precedent of like, go back to when you were a kid and you wanted to fly. Here, I'm doing it now. And I know what you're thinking. It's got to be wires. Let me successfully disprove move after move after move how there's no way it could be wires that are making this miracle happen in front of you. And it's the context that makes that so amazing.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you can be linear when you have escalation. You know,
So would the escalation of pulling each part of your face off be enough escalation prove?
If you introduce it with a kind of thing like, you know, as a kid, I didn't like the way I looked, and then I figured I'd pick and choose, and you got rid of this, but you realized, then who was I? And then you one by one reassembled your identity.
Or I would do it, imagine like this. Imagine like you're an undercover agent, and you've got an assignment. You can't go looking
the
like
brushwood
this.
Brushwood identity.
You know, exactly. So it's like you rub your face, and you start with one eyebrow, and you slowly, like bit by bit, your face completely changes from one face to another. That'd be rad.
I got a method. So let's go on to
of course you do. Why wouldn't you?
Next one.
That was all right, here. Real quick, before we move on. So much of any magic talk I've ever had with Andrew has always started with ideas of like craziest idea you've ever heard. He'll just be like, okay, picture this. And then explain this insane thing. And then it's like, and by the way, I have a method for it. But anyway, we can move on. Because Andrew always has a method because he's the most brilliant magical thinker that I've ever talked to.
Next question.
So we got a little bit of a competition between two people, first names only, Andrew and Simone. Andrew got his question first.
Okay.
Who would win in a fight? A unicorn or a Pegasus?
Oh, it's got to be. Oh, dude, this is tough.
Now, just all right here, because I'm an idiot. Pegasus, horse with wings. Unicorn, horse with a horn.
Right, correct.
Yes.
I to be honest, I'm going to say I know this just because history. Because
I saw it happen.
No, because history's told us air superiority wins wars. We've seen it time and time again in the last 100 years. Air superiority is what wins. So I'm going to have to go Pegasus. Even though it's not the sexier of the two beasts, you know, obviously for a dude, rather be into a unicorn than into a Pegasus. But a Pegasus could be dropping rocks from up top.
Well, let's, what?
His horsey paws?
Yeah, let's back up on the rock. I was thinking about that rock thing too, Brian, but I'm thinking like, let's only give them behavior we've seen horses do.
Okay, he could drop other bombs from the sky.
We did see a donkey in the Postman hold a sword.
Okay, all right.
And we've seen horses drive cars.
Yeah, yeah, well, and talk to...
No, I mean like in real, I'm talking real life.
Wait, yeah. You've seen him there's drive like, cars like, in real
like
life?
Some farmer took a pickup truck and made like a big steering wheel that the horse could chomp its teeth around and go back and forth.
No, I don't.
I saw it on Real People. It was cool.
Real People, yes. You sure it wasn't PM Magazine?
The world was crazy before cable. Like, I think like cable really took a lot of time out of people's days, and they weren't like, hey, you know what I should do? Make my horse drive a truck.
Oh my God. Like, think about those days when all you lived for was figuring out something idiotic enough to show up on That's Incredible. Like, incredible audacity. That donkey's driving a truck.
So we've got a Pegasus flying, and are we going to allow the Pegasus to drop rocks or not?
Well, he can hold something in his teeth and drop. I mean, if we're bestowing upon both of them the intelligence to do battle, then I'm going to say yes.
It takes intelligence to do battle?
Sure.
Tactics. How paternalistic male of you to say that, Brian.
Strategy. Yeah.
Way to enforce our heteronormative structure, pig. Well, let me ask you this. All right,
war
but, like, pig. Are there mythological weaknesses to the beasts of the unicorn and the Pegasus?
Okay, so here's what I know about unicorns, and I think unfortunately I'm undoing my own position here. But unicorns, I think they can hypnotize people. They have some kind of mind control. They could go invisible. I know that.
That's Chris Angel.
That's Chris Angel's a unicorn. You didn't hear this?
Wait, what?
He has very luxurious hair.
But like a Pegasus, though, it's like, you know, usually he's being ridden by Perseus.
Guy in a loincloth.
I know.
So that's the thing. So like we had like if we didn't allow weapons like rocks and stuff. So I mean, I would kind of put my money like on the unicorn, because as soon as the Pegasus got close, the unicorn would be like, just rip open its belly like a tauntaun, you know.
But like the Pegasus could come in from above and just be like, you know, it's waving its little magic wand all around. But meanwhile, the Pegasus goes clop 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 clop, four clops to the head, and then flies away again, and then comes back down, clop 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 on the head.
No, but Andrew's right that it only takes one swipe of that pretty pink belly on the Pegasus, and he's done like dinner.
Yeah,
like,
but unicorns. Are there any stories of unicorns successfully eviscerating an opponent?
Yeah, and in one of my mythologies, you know, they were built as war horses.
Mythologies,
no, this is actually true. Andrew, there's a book with a full backstory about the battle history of unicorns as the most fearsome animals on the planet.
I like the differentiation of between saying in one of my mythologies versus in a story I wrote, Pegasus, unicorn like kicked a lot of ass.
Well, I mean, I think that no matter what, there's a big horn on this thing, right?
Yeah, but it's not.
Look, not right here. Like, let's look at like a normal maypole ring around, Brian.
Dude, all I'm saying is I got to come down firmly on the air superiority of Pegasus. Superiority, it's called the Blitzkrieg, bro. And there's a reason that Pegasus.
But that's because they can drop missiles and shoot guns. Like, there's no projectile on a Pegasus.
Yeah, isn't
unless
there?
You talk about excrement.
That's what I'm saying, bro. You got the magic dew bombs.
That's not. But like, what? So it's just gonna be like the unicorn gonna like be like, oh really?
In my mythologies, there's a lot of magical powers to the Pegasus dew bombs.
I'm gonna say the problem with the air superiority argument is yes, historically that's true, but also the one of the air superiority was also the most industrialized nation.
Okay, I've just gotten yelled at from through the walls here in my Oakland apartment by somebody who screamed, "There's a reason why humans are at the top top of the food chain and not butterflies. So air power is not everything, according to Brett the Amtrekker Roundsville.
So Justin for the unicorn.
All I'm saying is there's a reason I'm wearing a t-shirt of the tastiest pieces of meat on a unicorn right now.
All I have to say is I think we have the most awesome Kickstarter campaign. We'll start with the software engine.
Okay.
We'll work our way up to actually genetically breeding these things.
I'll tell you what, if Neal Stephenson can raise all that money for, like, I want to see swords hit each other in a game better.
That's what I was thinking about. If he's got, you know, I'm like, it was funny, like, so Neal Stephenson's doing his Kickstarter fund to raise money to create a software engine to do realistic sword fighting. It starts off where he's sitting there, and the kind of thing you're thinking is, like, who the hell would want this? And then it pulls back, and you see he's got his own, like, you know, in, like, movies where the bad guy has a ninja army?
Yes.
He's got an army of guys clanging swords, you know, and you're like, oh, okay.
By the way, did you see the you guys probably did not recognize the special appearance, a cameo by one of video games' most legendary figures in that video. There's this Pac-Man. One moment when he's going through talking about, you know, we need IT, and he goes through all these different things. The last one is a guy who's forging some metal, and he's banging on an anvil. It's hard to recognize him because he has a beard, but he's forging a crowbar, and it's freaking Gabe Newell of Valve Studios appearing in there. Yeah, which I thought was very, very clever.
Yeah, totally did not pick that up.
Yeah, I didn't either. I had to have it spelled out for me.
All right, next question from Simone. Who would win in a fight, a unicorn or a centaur?
All right, now centaur... human with horse bottom?
Yes.
Right?
It's got to be... okay, so here's the...
I always get centaur and minotaur mixed up. I'm glad I got it right this time.
All right, no, you got it right. Okay, so here are the things. First of all, you can't bring in intelligence because they're both equally intelligent, right?
Why?
Because in almost every time I've seen unicorns are as intelligent as humans in all the mythologies I've read.
All of Brian's wandering behind his house.
Yes, because they're magical creatures and they're intelligent, right? It's the opposable thumb. I got to give it to centaurs. It depends on how much time they have to prepare. Like, if you just scoop them both up and throw them in an arena, sure, you know, it'll be a unicorn.
Yeah, I think if I were a centaur, because you got the legs and you got the hands, you know that horn's coming right at you, right? And so your goal is to, like, get that use that sort of, you know, Japanese-style block-the-blade kind of crash, push it away. And once you get hold of that horn, I'm thinking, like, maybe wrestle that thing to the ground, rip it off and stab it in its neck.
You're talking about with your bare hands, you're a centaur with human hands holding on to an alicorn? Are you kidding
me? It's not centaur. I mean, he doesn't have human hands. He has centaur hands. He's got a lot of leverage here.
Those guys
are usually buff. They don't look like us.
It doesn't matter.
Us walking up to a computer like, all right, this saves me having to sit on the chair.
Wait a minute. Are you seriously saying?
You saw a centaur looking like Larry the Cable Guy.
Okay, you realize this is exactly the same as saying, like, well, I could take out a ninja. I just clap my hands on his sword, and then, like, after that, I would just ride him like a donkey.
Centaurs are not peaceful. They're always fighting, and I'm thinking that they prepare for this.
Okay, look, if you're going to go with the centaur, at least justify it smartly and say because he has a sword and a shield and tactics and opposable thumbs. Those are the reasons to go with the centaur.
A sword and a shield. Like he's got hands enough that he can build stuff, so he can build whatever he wants. So your point is intact, Brian. I'm saying that the biggest thing is that he can throw stuff. There's projectiles that are a part of this battle in the way that nothing else.
Wait. Okay, but if they just drop space aliens, drop him in an arena. Where's the stuff he's gonna throw?
What if he's a Spanish centaur who watched bullfights, Brian?
I don't know what that even means.
You know, humans can beat a bull. A centaur can beat a unicorn.
How to do that in Texas? You know that.
Okay, so I'm confused here. You guys are saying that the centaur would win, but you're saying it for totally high reasons, like they have magic hands that can hold on to sharp-bladed alicorns without having
to rip a shark. Andrew said that, not me. So get off my face.
Okay, all right. So are you backtracking on that? Are you off Team Andrew for the?
What do you mean? I'm
I never sign on to the hand pulling thing. I think that that would be one possible solution.
One possible solution? It's the craziest idea in the world. This alicorn is a weapon. You can't hold a weapon with your hands. Just slice it to ribbons with the.
Well, do you think the unicorn
horn is sharp? It's got a sharp bladed edge, Brian.
Yes.
It's like a corkscrew.
No, it's like a corkscrew, and you hold it, and plus it's magic. With the magic,
do me a favor. Go down and pull out the wine opener that I'm sure that you've used plenty of times tonight because you're talking like an idiot, and grab around the center of it and see if your hand gets sliced off.
Justin, Brian's right, because, you know, you see unicorns in the forest all the time sawing logs with the thing, you know, cutting things up.
I can't believe you're saying that. Okay. How can we agree and yet you be so stupid in your arguments? How is this happening?
I don't know. I'm too busy looking at a unicorn making sushi hand rolls with his super sharp alicorn. He's sawing boots like the Ginzu knife demonstration.
Yeah, in Brian's mind, the alicorn is just like, it's a katana.
It's certainly it's sharp. It's sharp enough to do damage.
Is it sharp from end to end?
Give me a real world equivalent.
A real world equivalent? Yeah, man. Okay,
so like a lance.
I don't know, but it's let's say for sake of discussion,
it's a drill.
Yeah, let's say it's like a drill, but I'm not saying it's just a. You'll notice that it's not like a corkscrew, like a pig's tail. It's like this. It's got sharp edges as it goes around.
Is that how like a narwhal a drill bit. Horn works?
What's that?
Is that how a narwhal's horn works?
I don't know. How does a narwhal?
Not like that.
It's like a lance.
Allow me to reiterate that its alicorn is magic, and it has, like, mind powers. It could go invisible and stuff. Don't underestimate the unicorn. You guys are like, I don't know, grab the horn and just, you know, you win. I think that's how it works.
If I was a centaur, and I would want to be like, if I was a centaur and I had to put up with all of the jokes the kids made, I'd be like, you know, who would I want to be able to beat up in the forest? You know, if girls didn't like me and girls liked unicorns, all I would do is I'd dream about how to kick a unicorn's ass.
That, right? Okay, but here's the thing.
And then I just yell, hey, ladies, I'm hung like a me.
But here's the thing. Sitting around dreaming about what jerks unicorns are doesn't mean that you're able to beat them.
Because then I would go to Neal Stephenson. I'd say, we need to make a game so I can practice this.
Okay. It's and called.
I imagine the fight
would
kind of be
like sparring horses and put lances on their heads.
I imagine it would kind of be like Mike Tyson's Punch Out, where you just have to sort of dodge.
You have to wait until their eyes glow red.
You're just going to punch it right in the right position, and his horn's just going to go flying away.
We better throw to a commercial break or something right now because it's getting too heated.
I'm about to punch someone when their eyes turn
red. This is actually worse than the Mars debate. Let me remind everybody that Rob Harper would like you to listen to this interview in a Russian accent. And he paid $30, so goddamn am I going to do it. The Republic of Finland has released their radio archives of the General Republic Finland all-time radio. Horror, adventure, comedy, in sci-fi, full cast audio plays direct from Finland. Now available at Vinland, hold on, Vinland all-time radio.podbean.com.
Just once in the, give the URL in English.
http://, Vinland old-time radio.podbean.com, and that is two N's in Vin, V-I-N-N-L-A-N-D, old-time radio.podbean.com. And we thank Rob for sponsoring the podcast. Remember, you can get your $30 listener sponsor spot in by going to weirdthings.com/sponsor.
And by the way, we are not in a position to absolutely verify how many people will hear your message, but I can unequivocally state with 100% confidence that at least 20% of planet Earth will hear it. We're talking over 1 billion people plus, and that's a promise from Brian Brushwood for only $30.
Yes, and if you don't get that listenership, then you can go to Brian, who lives at the following address.
1-800-UNICORN-HORN-STAB-U-EVISCERATION.com.
I love the idea of throwing open the questions because you get some interesting ones and then you get frightening ones. You want to hear a frightening one?
Yes. All right, number one, I love the idea of open mailbag
episodes of the podcast.
This I'm going to read this without the parenthetical first. Then I'm going to give you the parenthetical.
All right.
Hey, guys. Love the show. Here's a question for you. I recently had an experience of sleep paralysis. And so I was wondering whether any of you have experience with this phenomenon.
I have.
Now, do you want to hear his experience?
Let's address it one level at a time. we'll pretend like he threw that out and we're all going to answer. And then we kick it back to him. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. You know, I don't think I have, although I have experienced lucid dreaming. That was a lot of fun. And I find weirdly with my dreams, when I wake up, no matter how miserable the dream was, I always have this perverse desire. Like, I remember my first thought of the morning is, I want to go back there. Like, just to find out what happens next, or to right the wrong, or to go back to flying in magical armor.
Bonnie, I want to go back into my dream.
Exactly, exactly. I'm like, oh, great, I'm awake next to my beautiful wife and children. Yeah. Please, let me go back to dreamland, where I was being eviscerated by space aliens.
Justin?
Yeah, I have never had sleep paralysis. I've slept, walked, and actually I've talked to Brian a lot recently about
the reverse sleep
patterns now that I'm on the road with the Go game more and have like just different responsibilities that I've been doing a lot of waking up in the middle of the night with things I need to do and sometimes going and taking a shower.
No, by the way, like, this is no lie. Justin Robert Young is a regular somnambulant Sammy when it comes to night journeys. He is all kinds of boogie feet.
Yeah, but never paralysis, although I'm a little bit familiar with it because it goes along with another kind of phenomenon which we are very interested here at Weird Things. But Andrew, please read the parenthetical.
And actually, let me before we hear the parenthetical, let me just say,
I get my sleep paralysis experience, guys.
Wait, do you have one?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand my place here.
Actually have one? That's amazing. No,
it's
tell
the
us.
Guy that has sleep paralysis. Maybe I could interject something.
Yes, tell us.
I'll save it for another time. Let's move on.
And Andrew's like Ron Paul at the Republican debates when they're talking about healthcare and they skip Ron Paul. And he's like, well, why don't you talk to me? I'm the only doctor on stage.
Yes, I haven't had it recently. I used to get sleep paralysis occasionally, quite frequently. And I had some horrifying experiences, none like the parenthetical here. I was in Japan where I was living. I remember one night I woke up. I couldn't move. And I look out into the darkness, and I see a face. I see a face with, like, looks like he's wearing a bowler hat and had kind of a long, thin nose. It was a very frightening thing to look out there and see this face just kind of looking in a very frightening, scary way. And
said,
I'm telling
hello.
Myself, like, okay, if this is real, ain't nothing I can do about it. If this is not real, just wait it out. And I would try to move. I would try to move, and I would not be able to move my body. It was just so intense of a sleep paralysis. And so
The character, just to be clear, he leaned forward and he said, a little Tolchuk on the Gulliver?
It looked kind of like
the red, you know, red crow.
Kind of like, you know, from A Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
Well, eventually, as I'm awake, can't move, I see this, the image fades away. And what it was just the shape of the clothes in my closet. But it was just one of those things where your brain's immediately trying to say, you know, the pattern image is trying to say, what is this? What is this? I had this when I lived downtown Fort Lauderdale. I had an apartment. I was on the ground level. And sometimes I would wake up and I was right by like some gravel where people could walk by. And so I'd be there sleeping and I'd hear people walking and I'd wake up and I'd try to move and I couldn't move. And you hear this sort of, I mean, you're something walking around you, and it was just disturbing. It was just a really frightening thing. I don't get it anymore. But so our friend here, a demon child, tried to drag him into a mirror.
What?
Of course
it did.
But
that's a story for another time, he writes.
That's
a story for now.
Well, you don't just drop – I'm sorry. What show did you think you were writing into? Scientific Things? No. It's Weird Things.
All right, so like a demon. I mean, because number one, that sounds like a sequel to Drag Me to Hell, right? Like the demon child comes out and tries to drag him into a, or maybe no, maybe that's more of like an 80s Wes Craven kind of plot device.
Scary.
It's terrifying.
So yeah, sleep paralysis is scary. That's even worse. And if I believed in aliens and stuff, like when I've had it before, I'd be like, yep, that's their, I'm going to get probed.
Well, that's what, you know, I was referring to when I said that it's largely a part of the physical explanation of when people say that they think if they've been abducted by aliens. Many times, not of course all the time, we'll leave open the window of possibility that people are being abducted by aliens, but many times it is sleep paralysis. And like Andrew said, it's the idea of the brain kind of working overtime to solve pattern puzzles when not all the information is available.
Yeah, right. It's like the brain is so good at solving puzzles that it solves them when they're not even there. You know, it's just like, there's some noise, there's something in there. It's like, well, let's find it, and it'll find it whether it was originally there or not.
Go ahead. Let's say our brain's like the most sophisticated pattern recognition system there is, which means a lot of false positives.
And it shows you how creative we are, that like we can just seamlessly sort of weave in these kind of narratives, like the fact that like what is a creepy face, what is a creepy image, what is, you know, the idea of weaving in our own insecurities and fears and everything into this terrifying, all immersive experience.
So Serpico, that's Alex Serpico, writes, you could have the superpower to hear the thoughts of every other human, which would span the spectrum from just general nonsense to the darkest depths of their psyche, would you?
Nope.
Note that this ability would not be possible to shut off nor do selectively.
Nope.
Yeah, if you're just getting, because like, you know, even Professor X like has the Cerebro thing, and like that's like a pain in the butt. That so rarely goes right in X-Men, right? Like that's always going wrong, that someone's screwing around with Cerebro, or he starts tapping into people that he shouldn't, or it's
almost unfair. A question, because I can't think of a single reference in any kind of pop culture or science fiction of anything that turned out well with someone who had the ability to hear thoughts and couldn't shut it off. And I'm talking from the Twilight Zone episodes to, there was an episode of Gilligan's Island when they all got telepathy. Do you remember this? They could all hear each other's thoughts and they started kicking each other's ass and fighting all the time.
Like, I think it never turns out well for the person. I would say that if you were an extremely selfless person, maybe you would volunteer to do this because you could like find, you know, kidnappers as children and terrorists and stuff. But you're going to go nuts.
Yeah, you would be literally trading your own sanity and mental health in order to be a valuable tool for your country if you're going to go down that way. But that's
none of us are willing to do that.
No, so. Not me. Not this guy. Way too scary. Can we go back to talking about unicorns?
Next question.
Well, okay. Yeah. I don't think that... I mean, that's almost like an unfair question. Like, there should be like a, like, people are working around the clock and they expect to, in the next 5 years, to have a device that can narrow it down and narrow your frequency. But would you do it in the
Would you take 5 years of insanity of hearing every petulant, terrible, backbiting?
I think the problem is, it's like, I think for some people, they just would, I'd want to know, you know, but it's like, and we're people who found out and don't want to know, you know, we've realized what goes on in there, and it's not, never good.
Yeah.
You know, it's like asking you like about your girlfriend's past boyfriends or anything like that. It's never made the relationship better.
Yeah. No, that's a good way to put it.
So, a versus Randall Flagg.
Okay.
Stephen King. Mythology.
Richard Fannin.
What's that?
Nothing.
Big fan? Big fan, Brian?
No. I just said Richard Fannin, but that would be crazy if Richard Fannin and Randall Flagg were the same person. I don't know why I said that. Forget about it.
It said Randall Flagg, totally different, versus the Joker. That's Randall Flagg because he's magical.
Oh, yeah. No. He's got actual powers, and he's not just bat crap insane with makeup on his face.
Yeah. That's... Next question.
Yeah, I like the way you didn't even give Justin a chance to respond. You're like, I think we're done here. Randall Flagg has the trash can man at his disposal. That alone would take on Joker.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, you know, Justin, you want
to
add to that?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not really super familiar with Randall Flagg.
Justin is not a big Randall Flagg guy, so that's why I just kind of decided to spare him the embarrassment, Brian, that you wanted to throw in his face.
Well, the thing is, like Stephen King has this brilliant ability to take like fully one third of all the villains he's ever created and figure out a way in one book to say, essentially, they're all the same guy. Like, this is not even an exaggeration. Like, if you've encountered, if you've read three Stephen King books, one of the bad guys in those three books is pretty much the bad guy of all the books because he does that awesome cross-promotion Dark Tower stuff.
Yeah. Well, there we go.
So, Chris writes, running the Weird Things gauntlet, listening to every episode in order, parenthetical, everybody has a parenthetical, by the way, to our lover audience, and loving it, by the way, haven't heard any discussion of the Megalodon and the possibility of its existence in deep recesses of the ocean, such as the Marianas Trench. I've heard teeth have been discovered that are less than 10,000 years old. It gives me chills to think of floating in the South Florida Ocean and seeing a shark the size of a tour bus slowly ascending towards you. Is it weird? I kind of want that to be how I die. Love you guys.
Okay. Now, first of all, before we talk about the Megalodon, let me just say I am a strong, strong advocate of the fact that...
Of death wishes.
We're all going to die.
Colorful death wishes.
We're all going to go out. If you are going to go out, like I used to worry about, like, what if the end of the world happens on my watch? What if there's a nuclear war? What if that is the end of humanity forever? And I remember thinking, like, well, if you have to choose from the great menu of when to go out, like, if I could choose before I was even born, I think I would choose to be part of the last generation on Earth. So if you got to go out anyway, might as well go out seeing how it all ends.
I was just watching Deep Impact, and there's this spoiler alert, you know, astronauts try to save Earth, and they have to do, you know, they have to do this last ditch effort to try to blow up the comet to try to save some. If they blow it up, humanity will survive. They won't get all of
it. Right. It won't be pretty. It won't be pretty, but.
And then Elijah Wood throws a ring in the comet.
Yes, that's true.
They're like, we got to do this. And I'm thinking, like, they would, like, Andrew, what do you think? They'd look over and they'd see me smiling. Like, why are you smiling? I'd be like, what better way to go out?
Yes.
You know, it's like, what did you, how did I die? Oh, I saved humanity.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
She's continued. After this, if we survive, it's all downhill from here.
Yes. Justin, I don't hear you commenting on sacrificing yourself to save anything.
No, that's groovy. I'm cool with that. You know, but no, I'm with you on both sides. I think, like, you know, if you're going to be part of the last generation, then that's pretty awesome. If you're going to save all future generations, that's pretty awesome.
Justin could not sound more like the Weasley guy on the team who's like, oh yeah, let's do it. Let's save humanity.
Sure.
And then last minute, just
so much lower than you guys. Like, my grade is so much, like, I was actually driving through. I had a guest in town for the last week, a completely platonic friend of mine, and she's very afraid of bridges. Like, she's terrified, specifically the bridges in the Bay Area, because she's afraid an earthquake will shake the bridge.
They're not called Bridgets anymore. They're called brittle people. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I was of the opinion, and I told her, I'm like, listen, if an earthquake completely breaks the Bay Bridge and we all go falling into the ocean and die, like, that's fine by me. Because, number one, I have no control over it. And number two, like, I'll be one of, like, a couple hundred people that died falling
into it. It'll be a memorial marker and not just in a graveyard.
Also, think about this. It's like, if you are going to go off the Golden Gate Bridge, better to do it with, like, a safety harness on and airbags than, you know, just, you know, off the side by yourself.
And Justin, one day, like 30 years from now, I'll drive across that bridge that when they rebuild my kids. You know what's special about this bridge? Like, what? I'll go as in Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Oh, and I think I knew somebody who knew somebody who died here.
It's like a long time ago, before they rebuilt it, James Franco encountered some monkeys.
There's something else I've been meaning to... it'll come to me. It'll come.
But yeah,
to
no,
me.
My threshold for how I die is very low in terms of it being like I could be okay with how awesome it is. Like
a new Taco Bell menu item.
Yeah, it's fine. I'll die for that. I'll
the
die
Rita
for the
Ebola.
Double chalupa burrito that comes out from Taco Bell. I'm fine.
So Megalodon. Okay, here's the problem, Chris, and probably the good thing. The Megalodon, as far as we know, was a shallow water shark. It was not a deep water shark, so it probably wasn't like hanging out in the depths of the Marianas Trench. That was a very, very radically different environment for it. So that, like, in the book Meg and the sequels to that, that was the premise that it was down there. But we have no reason to think that it was ever down that low, and most of its prey was higher up.
Well,
and the 10,000-year-old Megalodon tooth, that was found apparently on the HMS Challenger, which was, you know, one of the big, like in 1875, which was a big, the expedition ship to go out there and look for, you know, Challenger depth and all that. They said it was like 10,000 years old, you know, but that was 1875 idea of how you date things. And that's not today. I mean, we would know that it wasn't that.
Now, when you say, like, well, it's a shallow water creature, like you don't think it could be, like, you know, swimming out to sea and then die and then fall all the way? I guess that would be, like, hundreds of miles or something, huh?
Well, that's, I mean, not... it could be. It doesn't have to be near coastal. But, I mean, there's you know, the idea is that you have – they have different zones, paleologic zones and bathic zones where fish hang out and different species of fish and, you know, where you're going to find, like, big schools of tuna and stuff. And there are deep water sharks. The goblin shark, you know, rarely seen and an awesome looking shark, is a deep water shark. But the megalodon, the big giant shark that we're familiar with, it's not. But that's not to say there's not stuff just as scary or even more frightening down there. You know, you could have kraken.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's my, that would be an awesome thing I hope happens in my lifetime, is we just have a much more, you know, better or comprehensive tools that we just get a really awesome look at the ocean or wide expanses of the ocean and can get pictures and a better sense of just what horrifying terrors are waiting down there and have lived down at the bottom of the ocean, just creeping around forever.
What else we got, Andrew?
We had kind of a political kind of one.
Yes, let's get political in this. I am proletarian.
Brian G. writes, is my biggest fear, I ask it for fears, is now that the Republican Party has embraced the non-critical thinking part of the electorate, the anti-science portion, the ones that don't believe in any government.
You didn't tell me it would be this kind of political question.
Yeah, the problem is, like, there's the thing that the Texas Republican Party, which has always been the Texas Republican Party, had a anti-critical thinking component in their legislature, their description of what that party's about. And it's got a lot of I've never met a Republican that agrees to every single portion in that Texas Republican Party plan. So it's a very kind of, so this person.
All right. So Republicans be all dumb with science. Go on.
And that the Koch brothers are going to destroy the libertarian think tanks. Well, the Koch brothers founded the libertarian.
Oh,
the
my God.
So technically, they'd just be kind of, you know, they'd be dirtying up their own car if they.
Yeah, and actually, there was a battle over control of that. That's been settled.
What is this question? All right. Just read the question as is. I won't interrupt.
By the way, I've sat in the living room of Charles Koch, by the way.
Yeah, did you do Koch with Koch?
Was it nice guy. Very, very. Science. This guy's trying to say they're going to destroy science. He's actually went to MIT, has a degree in science, is a chemist, and modeled the whole success of the company Koch Industries on scientific management. So things are more complex than we want them to be. So then my side, he says, would the liberal side would be the only ones pushing.
Wait,
for
he says my
how
side.
To cover.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
Basically, it'd be up to us to save the planet. Indemnify the space industry, not demonize, but we're the Chinese and molten salt. That, okay.
I hate all of you. I hate all of you equally. You are all self-righteous prigs and jackasses. I hate you Republicans. I hate you Democrats.
Says the guy screaming and calling everyone stupid. You're all so self-righteous, you people.
That's right. Listen, Justin, I don't know if you realize there's only two kinds of people in this world. There's stupid people. And then there's me, your witness,
Your Honor, guilty, because I don't know how courtrooms work. Objection overruled.
All I'm going to say is when they do that matrix of, like, you know, science or anti-science attitudes, you find out what gets interesting is that you know, they do some things. Republicans or conservatives, well, social conservatives, we'll use that example because Republicans are big tent, Democrats are big tent. It's all big tents, and to use labels. Social conservatives tend to be more distrustful of institutions or people using the words of science to say something than so much science itself. But they would disagree with more scientific things that we believe to be true than maybe people who are, quote, progressive. But when you start to parse through, when you look at things like genetically modified food, which is tested, it's safe, as safe as anything we can test for, you find that the people who are against that tend to be overwhelmingly liberal, progressive, or whatever. So it's like they all have their things.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? And I think that's what makes me mad about both sides of it. Like when you talk to a lot of people who, for example, don't want to believe that evolution is real because they don't like – they hate the aesthetic idea of like, ew, monkeys. I don't want to believe we came from monkeys. And it's like I want to punch them. But, you know, it's like aesthetics don't carry into it. And then likewise, you talk to the, you know, to the liberal soccer moms and they're like, ew, genetically modified Franken food. It's gross. I don't want to give that to my babies. And it's like, and I want to punch her.
Yeah, you get – you know, we get these – we just had the big environmental summit in Rio and the airport was flooded with private jets and highly air-conditioned master, you know, president suites and every hotel. And it's like, all right, there's this kind of like, I believe there's science there that something that we're doing, you know, an experiment, putting a lot of CO2 up there. I believe I'm not smart enough to know a lot of this, but I believe that if I was around telling other people how they need to live their life, I'm going to probably make some sacrifices first.
All I'll say is since I've moved out to California, I have not changed a bit. Just like in Florida, I like to go on my morning walks to the farmer's market after my sunrise yoga. And as I'm perusing all the farm fresh produce, organic, of course, you know, I there's this farmer's market in Oakland where like.
Is this the one your guru told you about?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
This is before you voted no on Prop 8.
For all the progressive ideas, and this is a very liberal community, there's a lot of stuff that is very anti-science, a lot of, you know, alternative medicines and stuff that's been very, very debunked and, you know, proven to be at best, you know, not effective and at worst an absolute scam and harmful to people who seek, you know, actual remedies for things. So it's like, it's not like, I don't think either side really can put the badge on that says,
yeah, you get like, oh, you know, look at those faith healers taking advantage of people. Oh, try this homeopathic remedy. It's great.
Sure.
You know, it's this, I think an open mind is a mind willing to consider all possibilities and try to understand why other people see value in something. And, you know,
that is one of the weird things. For me, you know, since we're doing a show called Weird Things, is the way there does seem to be idiocy that tracks on both sides. Or I'm gonna use the word idiocy, which is an unfair word that I'm throwing at him. But I'm going to say non-scientific thinking. There is extraordinarily strong anti-evidence-based thinking on both sides. There are issues that demonstrably have been proven and repeatedly proven on both sides to not work that both sides adhere to, and I find that fascinating. And
yeah, you know, you get one group will be critical that other people haven't accepted evolution, and then when you say, well, how does evolution apply to biology and economies and the idea that markets work
free markets,
for the same
yeah.
reasons, and then that, well, that's different. You need control.
Did you read Shermer's book about economics and monkeys?
No.
The science, I think, is the science of good and evil. Is that what it is? He talks about essentially how market mentalities cause people to have a perception of fairness and how.
Yeah, I've read like
nuts.
Ridley stuff on that.
And that's
you know, markets, things like that. You markets are inherently, they function through morality and people who are, you know, all these. When you really take Plotiner's dilemma and you add the aspect of memory and put it into a social aspect, you find out people are good. People are good. You know, economy.
Well,
markets
and not only are people good, but they are staggeringly, shockingly good. Think about how many miles you drive an entire lifetime. How many thousands, if not millions, of cars you pass less than 12 inches away from each other, speeding at 70 miles an hour, separated by nothing but an imaginary painted line and an agreement that, in general, we shouldn't run high-speed devices into each other because that would rob each other of life. That is staggering to me, that the number of social miscreants as a percentage is so unbelievably low. That's what drives me nuts about the perception, you know, and you hear stuff like, you know, like kids kidnapped. We all have this terrible image of a guy in a trench coat and glowing red eyes scooping up children to eat them or whatever. Whereas, you know, I'm going to make up all these numbers. 99.bajillion% are relatives that steal the kid, and most of the kids are returned within 24 hours. That's not to say that terrible things don't happen, but it's shocking to me how little horrific things do.
Well, here, figure it on this. There have been people who have, through a court of law and investigation, been determined to have a premeditated murder in their minds. And they've left their house, and they've driven and murdered somebody else. And on that drive, they respected the boundary of the lines and didn't crash their car into somebody else, despite the fact that they wanted to end and did end a life. Just not those lives. They haven't. Those guys haven't done anything.
Whoa, this guy didn't.
It's this other person.
This guy didn't sleep with Steve from work. Come on, why would I kill him?
The population, there's going to be approximately 2% of people are going to be sociopath. That, when you do the metrics and you measure, you're going to get 2% of people are sociopath. And that's going to be true of whether or not it's this free market libertarian ideal or it's a totalitarian socialist sort of structure or whatever. You're going to have them. And when you put them, give them the power of using, legalize them to use violence to enforce rule of law and ethics and everything else, it can to be more problematic. And those civilizations, they seem to be the ones that rise to the top.
I'll tell you what.
There'll be bad people there. Maybe they'll run Enron. Maybe they'll run for Congress.
Yeah, dude, watch The Wire and realize that it takes a special breed of weirdo to actually want that kind of power. It's messed up.
Yeah. So, Brian, in answer to Brian asked the question here, I would say that obviously, you know, you in asking us, where we tend to come from the sort of, we think people are pretty good, kind of, that's why we tend to believe in markets and stuff, and we're not into sort of the paternalistic government sort of view. You know, that's the answer you're going to get from us. So I don't know if it's satisfactory.
I'll tell you what's satisfactory, Andrew. The antagonist movement and their new DVD, The Dolls of Lisbon. What's it all about? Well, I'm glad you asked. Art, dolls, and crime. You can find all the details at the Dolls of Lisbon's listing on Amazon, or you can get it on instant video for only $1.99. Head on over to Amazon, type in The Dolls of Lisbon, L-I-S-B-O-N, like the town in Portugal, and you can enjoy it today from the Antagonist Movement. Thank you very much for sponsoring the Weird Things Podcast.
All right, we got a ton of these. We'll do rapid fire.
Yeah, ready.
Our buddy Dan Dirks.
He did.
So go back to your early 20s, before any of you had kids. You're given the opportunity to take a vial of liquid that will make you stop aging, cure all of your ailments, make you immune from disease, and increase your mental powers. However, there are two conditions to help the world population from exploding. Two conditions. First one. If you take the liquid, you can no longer have kids, you are irreversibly infertile, and also you are barred from adopting kids from anyone that has not taken this liquid. Two, someone on the planet that you are not close to will die. If you take the vial, anyone that you are close to is immune from dying from this future. You will never know who the person is. The death will look like it occurred via natural causes. If too many take the vial, that such no one can die, will the liquid stop production forever? What do you do?
Let's
go Justin first.
Okay. Go.
All right, I missed the first part.
All right, Brian, go.
Okay, well let me just say this before I answer. Andrew, have you read the Dreaming Void trilogy?
Not all of it.
Okay, but you encountered Eddie Ard and his powers and what he could do and stuff. Okay, so one of the things in this story is that this person realizes he has the ability to dial back time. Whenever something goes wrong, he can unmake things, right? And there's a particularly pernicious character who's so rotten to the core, so evil that that no matter how many times he rewinds reality to try to fix things with them, the guy figures out another way to ruin everyone, kill people, destroy things, take over this town or whatever. And so eventually he goes all the way back to the night this guy is conceived and drops a little something in the drink of the father who is about to rape the lady to make the baby. The side effect, he goes on to relive the 18 years of his life up until that point and is horrified to realize that one of his favorite grandchildren never becomes born. And that, out of everything, is what drives this character nuts. He's so angry that it's not that this person turned out different. This person was never made because he had to correct the evil from this other person, and that is why, like, I'm in that trap. I got kids, and there's nothing you could offer me that would make me unmake my children. There's no way. I am too emotionally bound to where I am.
Justin?
I don't think that these kind of solutions ever work. Yeah, I'm with Brian that, like, there's... Oh, I mean, maybe it wasn't the point that Brian was going to make, but it was something that I thought about while Brian was talking, that, like, no matter how much you try to take a scalpel to fix the elements of life that we don't like, we can't do that without affecting elements that we do. That everything is woven together, and we can work inside of it. We can try to move the tides incrementally one way or another, but in these kind of solutions, it's never, you know, nothing ever ends. I mean, this is the element that you know, Watchmen forever changed my philosophy on.
And yeah, and so to Dan's question, would I become immortal if somebody else died? No, I wouldn't.
Not even one person.
I couldn't live with the idea that somebody died so I could live forever. Even though I may disappoint people for
all right, let me gray area you right here. And I know this is supposed to be rapid fire, so I'll keep it short. Let's say somebody voluntarily said, "I'm going to cut off 10 years off of my life so that you may live 100 more years. I give this to you freely of my own will." Would you accept?
I'm inclined to accept that.
All right.
So, this is our friend from Tavo Tower, Tamur from
T2T2.
Right before the show, there was a conversation. Somebody, we won't want to mention names, but somebody happens to work in a laboratory where they said that they looked into a cage one day and they saw a mouse that was born with no front legs, and it looked kind of like a frog mouse because it had big back legs.
Oh, wait a minute.
So T4T wants to know, what is the best way to prepare for the coming frog mice apocalypse?
He says, geez.
Three special cats.
I would say we need to genetically engineer Pegasus.
Snake cats!
Take it, Pegasus, as fast as we can. Air superiority.
Derek writes, if a weeping angel looked at a silence, would it attack?
Wait, if a what?
No. What would happen is they both realize that they're basically the same character and they shouldn't have done the exact same creature design. And by the way, the silence was basically ripped off from Buffy anyway. And the last season of Doctor Who was underwhelming. That's the answer.
All right. Moving right along. Travis writes, my name is Travis. I've been a huge fan of the show for a long time. Saw your Twitter post about questions for the show. I recently saw a movie, Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. Find it hard to believe in this era that scientists couldn't find a way to break up the asteroid. My question is, what methods would break to destroy an asteroid colliding with Earth? Or what could be the best survivor scenario? Guys, keep up the awesome work. I'll give just quick back. The problem is not all asteroids are the same. Some asteroids, we get hit every day by asteroids. Some, you know, specks of dust. Some of them could be the size of Manhattan.
Keep in mind, you know, also, there's not only the size of the asteroid, there's how close they are at the time we decide to take action. Taking action when it's out of the orbit of Pluto is way different from the orbit of Mars.
So yeah, let me get to the time. So the size thing, if you have something that we've had things bigger than Texas hit us, and that's how we got the moon. You know, we just sort of this big collide, you know, two planets, protoplanets collide and get there. You could take every nuclear bomb we've ever made and put it on a big piece of rock, and it ain't going to do anything. It's going to chip it, you know, tiny little bits of it. And then, as Brian points out, depending on how close it is, if it's a smaller one, we break it up. We still get a lot of matter coming into our atmosphere, and it's still got velocity. And we may not have, you know, it's not just the big boom when the impact hits. It's all of that matter hitting there. Maybe giving it more surface area will allow more of it to burn up in the atmosphere. So it's a big problem. The two biggest things Brian points out is how far away it is when we know, and the second thing is how big it is.
But as far as what you can do, there's really only a few options. And of course, the first thing that pops into people's mind is send a nuke into it and blow it up. And they're like, well, that's going to be on the surface. It's not going to really do much. Well, then we all saw Armageddon, so you got to drill a hole and blow it up in there. Then the problem is you still have the exact same amount of mass. It's just a shotgun shell instead of a single slug. But then there's other options. For example, example, you could the most effective from an energy standpoint is to land a craft on there and do what's called a mass drive, which essentially means imagine a little gremlin standing on the surface of an asteroid, grabbing pieces of the asteroid, ripping it off, and throwing it away. For every piece it throws away, that trajectory, you know, the piece thrown off goes, you know, we'll say 1,000 kilometers an hour in one direction, then the rest of the asteroid goes 1 kilometer an hour in the opposite direction. And if you keep doing that, especially if you have enough time, you can steer it way clear of the Earth with plenty of time to spare.
You still need a ton of, you know, you're still going to need a ton of energy. The problem is it comes down to sort of like distance and energy you have available to use. And because there's some people like here, like, oh, all we need is we'll use a gravity tug. We'll put a smaller object in orbit and tow it away. And like, that's great if you got 40 years to deviate it.
Right. Well, and then there's other things like, for example, as a matter of fact, in the story that I'm reading right now or just finished reading on Audible, Wild Cards, there's one case where there's this this asteroid headed towards the planet. And so some fictional superhero flies up and essentially blasts solar energy at one side of the asteroid, causing it to melt and eject all of this this steam and I want to say effluvia. Would that be an appropriate use of the word? I don't know. Effluvia down, and all of that causes it to essentially make it kind of a mild rocket shooting the asteroid out of the way.
Well, that's another approach, is the idea of if it's an asteroid, painting the asteroid so that it heats differently.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. So you got a light side and a dark side, and the sun's energy starts what, like spinning it out, or
yeah. Our best.
I did think there was something that we covered on Weird Things TV that was a theory of using nukes to knock it off course or to change.
That would be like our first approach. That's what it would be. We would try to nuke it to try to deviate. You know, the further out, the smaller amount of force. You know, if it's far enough out, a firecracker could theoretically, you know, do what you need. The best bet is right now nukes, but the second best bet, we got to start thinking about antimatter production.
You know what? I think you're right. If for no other reason, because I want antimatter production.
Yeah. Closer than you think.
An antimatter production.
What else we got?
What's that thing off the coast of Finland? Is the Millennium Falcon? Is it a hoax? Right? What is it?
Are you talking about the Google Earth image that looks like a Millennium Falcon? It's
the underwater thing guys just have gone down to and say that radios don't work and stuff.
Look, I mean, this is what's beautiful about this.
Is it where the bullion cube alien from Prometheus is hanging out?
The bullion cube alien. No, this is what's great about weird phenomenon is like just find something weird, go there and look for other odd things, but don't actually try to figure out why the odd things are happening. Just shrug your shoulders and be like, oh, well, I lost my equilibrium here. It must be that's another effect of the weird thing.
Drew writes, if aliens come and are not nice and decide to go to war with us, what can we possibly do to survive the coming onslaught? Justin.
It's something we've done always. We fight things we can't, you know, we think we can't beat. We survive. Or we go underground and we survive. I mean, whatever. It's just such a broad question. Like, we don't know what these things are. We don't know what their capabilities are. We just know that they're not nice and they want to fight. Then we fight unless we think we can't win, and then we look to survive.
Justin. Spoken like a misty-eyed optimist. What we do is not what you want us to do. What we do is what every technologically inferior native population has done in the face of an aggressor with superior technology. We curl up and die. That's what we do.
Can I throw out a
curl up and die? You tell me that we don't assimilate, that there haven't been lesser cultures that have assimilated into other cultures?
Not of different
species. They're this advanced. I got a theory. Anybody hear my theory?
Go ahead.
65 million years ago, maybe we were at war. Maybe something wanted Earth. Slammed in. Maybe it had some genes that didn't exist before. It was able to make itself look kind of like a mammal, put it on the Earth. Slammed a big rock in there to get rid of the big dinosaur so they wouldn't chew them up. Maybe.
I love that idea.
Maybe the first alien occupation happened then, after an asteroid, and it was an asteroid directed at us intentionally.
I love it.
With a firecracker 40 years before.
All right. Real fast. You're the commander of a mission to an unexplored life-bearing planet. In addition to your human crew, you can take three cryptids along with you. Which do you choose?
Is Brainiac a cryptid? Can I count him as one?
No.
Okay.
Go.
Three cryptids. I'm going to go my favorite cryptids. Chupacabra, I'm taking. I'm definitely taking.
There's only three cryptids anyone can name. You can name Chupacabra, you got Chupi, you got Bigfoot, and you got Nessie. Who else is there?
Jersey Devil?
Yeah, he don't really count. He's playing for the ice hockey league.
All right, we'll move on. Unicorn meat, would it be good for you or bad for you?
I don't know. According to my shirt, it says that it's filled with glitter glue, dark meat, brisket, veggie bacon, magicalness, Kentucky Waterfall, McRibs, and Rainbow Factories.
So it all tastes like bacon.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm going to say it tastes great, and it's served with gluten-free quinoa and a raspberry soy sauce reduction at any restaurant in San Francisco.
Yeah. What is a centaur hung like?
A centaur. Duh.
All right. All right, who'd win in a fight, Magneto versus Plastic Man?
Well, that's stupid. Next question.
What is the weirdest comic book graphic novel you ever read? Not the best or worst, just the weirdest.
You know what? I'm going to say my favorite. They said not the best or worst. I'm going to say The Thing versus the Hulk, where it's like they're out in the desert, and all of a sudden they both get sucked into an alien world where the Thing, they're like, we need muscle. So The Thing and the Hulk, they both kick alien ass, and they're like, we will grant you two wishes. And then right at the end, The Thing is about to wish for the one thing he always wishes for, which is the ability to turn back to human. And then the Hulk just randomly says, we want food and we want to go home. And then the last frame of the comic book is them in the desert with the Hulk smiling as he's eating from a mountain of hamburgers and the Thing getting ready to kick his ass.
I would say The Invisibles by Grant Morrison. Very weird. I don't think I understood a goddamn word of it.
Yeah, I would say anything by Grant Morrison. All right. Was there any major drama behind the cancellation of Game On? I was really sad to see the show go.
Yeah.
This is true.
Well, we're proud to announce that Game On has been renewed in an alternate reality. Yes.
With Nessie and the Jersey Devil when he's not playing in his ice hockey.
All right. I think we've got, let me see if we got one more. I skipped through just a couple of them because they're kind of redundant to stuff. Any thoughts on the Jersey Devil? We've never discussed it before.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I know, I mean, the Jersey Devil is one of those cryptids that has, been a story that's been revised a couple times from, like, it being a mythical kind of, like, Catholic curse sort of humanoid creature to more of a chupacabra, Bigfooty kind of unknown animal sort of cryptid running through the marshlands of Jersey. What I think is that the origin, the origin of the Jersey Devil, that like a woman gave birth to it, you know, is pretty awesome and one of my favorite cryptid origin stories. So I'll stick to that.
All right. Last question is
coming up right now.
Do you think that there are other beings, aliens, lizard people, octopus, that are posing as human? Who?
Brian.
I would like to recuse
Brian
myself
the octopus from this and question. Andrew's the lizard.
That's, I can neither confirm
the weasel
nor deny. Got somewhere to go.
I mean, that'd be great. I would love it if we could unmask some people, living as sort of alien counteragents. There was a moment in the new Predators movie that I thought they completely missed the boat on an awesome twist. Where for everybody who hasn't seen it, there's a couple revelations of some of the characters, and there's one character who turns out is on the planet. Everybody's on the planet for a certain reason, and one of the character played by Topher Grace is there for a specific reason, even though we don't quite know why it is.
Are you preserving a spoiler for a movie that came out 2 summers ago?
He has an alien symbiote.
Yes. But I thought it would be great because you got to figure the Predators have to have some agent on Earth. Like, it's not like there's a Predator who's down here in, like, a fedora and a trench coat. And he's like, so where do you think the big warriors hang out? I'm asking for a friend. you know, they got to have humans down there that they're contracting with. And I would love, I thought that would be, that would, I was hoping that was what it was. And it wasn't, that Topher Grace was really just the bag man for the Predators, that he just gets communication through some sort of shadowy back channel and is the one that tags all the people that are going to eventually go.
His wife picks up the phone.
It's for you. So I love the idea of alien agents on Earth. That's great.
Last one before we go to picks. Dear Bri, thanks for signing my fire extinguisher. Not a question, but there it is. Reuben.
Did I sign a fire Port extinguisher? Oh, yeah. No, he actually brought a fire extinguisher to the show. Let me say real quick. Thank you. I could figure that out
from the email, Brian.
Thank you.
You haven't convinced us you remember him yet.
To Patrick Delahanty and all of the crew over at PortCon, it was a lot of fun. I got to meet with a lot of awesome voice talent who works on anime shows. We did the full Bizarre Magic show. We did a BB Live show after party thing. It was awesome, and I had such a good time, and thank you to everyone who made it out. There was a shocking number of the Diamond Club contingency who made it out, and it was really, really flattering.
Cool. Do we have any more commercials?
Hey there, gumshoes. If you follow the clues, you might be able to find Justin, Brian, and Andrew somewhere live in the same place. Yes, Dragon Con, Labor Day in Atlanta. You will be able to find the cast of this here podcast. Or not. We'll see. Gumshoes, it's a mystery. Thank you to Simone and Andrew for sponsoring this public service announcement. And go get 'em, gumshoes.
Picks.
I got one.
Right.
I got one.
All right. So we were talking about dreams and sleep paralysis earlier, and it turns out that there is a real gem that I've actually watched a couple of times now. It was originally
Jim, the cartoon.
It was truly outrageous if you think about it. In 2009, there was a Nova special called What Are Dreams? And it was about the fundamentals of what we've learned about dreaming. And it turns out...
Is this the one directed by Charles Colville and Sarah Holt and cast of Jamie Efros, Deidre Barrett, Patrick...
Yeah, it is. I'm really
I would describe the movie as both cerebral and streaming and on DVD.
Okay, I'm going to turn the camera away now. The point is, it's available for free right now, and here's what's cool about it. I learned a lot during this. I learned, first of all, that you don't just dream during REM sleep. You also dream during deep sleep, and you have different types of dreams. You have some dreams that are flashes of random images, sort of a rehash of the day, but you also have dreams that are real-time events that are why you experience sleep paralysis, because in cats, they've been able to induce, they severed whatever connections caused the sleep paralysis. And these cats, when they dream, they physically get up and walk around and they actually experience stuff. And it makes the interesting supposition it makes an interesting case for the purpose of dreams is to run simulations for problems that you encounter in life so that you're better equipped. And one of the examples they do is they have one psychological study where they have a guy play a snow skiing simulation game. And they tell him it's very important that he get as high a score as he can. He plays all day. They say you'll be tested again tomorrow. And then they put him to sleep. And when he sleeps overnight, they wake him up periodically to ask what he's dreaming about. And a lot of these people describe dreams where they're walking through snow or they're thinking about avalanches or they're picturing themselves in a cold, snow-covered environment. And the next morning, they find that their score is improved because essentially they spent all night trying to solve particular problems, running simulations in their mind. It's absolutely fascinating. I really enjoyed it, and it's up on Netflix. What Are Dreams? The Nova special is what you want to look for.
Brian, do you chase rabbits in your dreams?
Sometimes. Can you tell me about the rabbits?
And here I thought dreams were only vulnerabilities for which corporate thieves could steal my secrets.
I will also say that you guys should watch Tron Uprising because there are like 5 episodes. They're all free. They're up on Disney. If you go to, Disney.com/Tron, they're all on there. Really enjoying it. The art style is gorgeous.
I'm gonna give a pre pick to the Amazing Spider-Man, because I'll guarantee you,
if this movie sucks,
I'm still gonna like it because I just love Spider-Man. Like, I walked out of Spider-Man 3, and that's a movie that is fairly legitimately terrible. And there are still parts that will come up on cable, and I'd be like, oh, look, Spider-Man. And he's fighting Venom.
I'll tell you what, man. The early buzz sounds like it's going to be the surprise hit of the summer. So far, and not to too much cross-pollinate, but your picks during the summer movie drafts, Ted did better than expected. We'll talk about
number
it tomorrow.
Number one original R-rated comedy.
It made over $56 million. So
bigger than the original Hangover.
Yeah, we'll talk about that tomorrow.
Amazing Spider-Man. I really love the cast. I'm very excited to see it tonight. By the time this episode comes out, the movie will be out in theaters. So I highly recommend everybody go see it, because I think I'm going to like it a lot.
My pick is, I just watched this last night. It was on Redbox. And when it came out in the theaters, I'm like, I don't want to see this in a theater. And then I watched it and I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. It's Contagion.
Oh, yeah. No, I heard great things about it. I heard it's a infection movie that really pays respect to the actual science, about the actual procedures of what the CDC would do, about the real concerns, not what would make for good Hollywood flash and trash.
Yeah, it's a very, to mine, and I've been doing, I've written a book and doing another one that sort of deals on some of these themes, and I do, I would never pretend to be any kind of expert on stuff, and I certainly take a lot of license when I want to tell the kind of story I want to tell, but what he wanted to do was tell this kind of bad case scenario sort of story that, with the semi within the realm of plausibility, and, what would happen if you had one of these, a new virus come out that wasn't something we were familiar with, and kind of you eventually find out the end where it came from, but what would happen through, the day one, day two, day three, and try to tell a very realistic tale. And I thought it was very well done, very good, very kind of scary. And the thing that, I would say about this, and people you worry about asteroids and other stuff, is what you're much more likely to have 100 really close calls before you get the thing that wipes out, society, or, you're going to have a minor airplane malfunction before you're going to have a major airplane malfunction,
right.
Right. And you're going to have the Spanish flu killed something like 1% of the population, when we had in the dark ages, or excuse me, with the plague, we had periods where that killed, in some places killed a third of the population. So we're going to get the one that kills 0.5% or 1% or 5% before we get the one that kills 90%. So don't worry, okay?
You'll be fine,
1% one is still will change life as we know it. It would be very scary and frightening. But just relax.
Can I give one on your theme here, one additional plug for a little game called Plague Inc. that is available on iOS, where your stated goal is to
eradicate humanity.
Yes, it is amazing. Like you get different genetic markers. You mutate over time, and you could be a virus, a bacteria, or a neurotoxin, or all these other things. And you base a parasite, and they all have different rules of their infection rates and so on. It's way fun because you find yourself unironically saying things like, the problem with Iceland is that it's so isolated and that they're a rich country and it's harder to infect. So what you need to do is up your resistance to drug, mutate regularly, and make sure to infect seaports. Make sure that you're transmittable by liquids.
That's awesome. It's like SimCity for germs.
It really is. Yes. And you find yourself like agonizingly frustrated as you're like, come on, New Zealand, I hate you.
That's disturbing. The upside is that we're getting much faster. We talked about this before. It's sequencing viruses and being able to find out what makes them work. That doesn't mean we've been able to cure a bunch of viral diseases, but we are getting better. We come up with things like Tamiflu, which is, do you know how Tamiflu works, by the way?
The moment you find out that you've got the flu, you have to take it immediately, and it doesn't cure you. It just shortens the duration of the flu to like a day.
Yeah. What it does is it impedes the ability of the virus to leave your cell.
Oh, so it sticks it where it is, where it's
yeah,
like,
so
if you're going to ruin
it, so
that.
Getting the you know, keeping it continually where it replicates throughout there, that's what it does. So it doesn't generally attack the virus, and it works with certain strains, and some strains maybe you increase the dosages, but it's not a catch-all, cure-all kind of thing by any chance. But I thought that was interesting. Well, how does Tamiflu work? And I was looking that up, and so, you know. And, of course, the problem is that we can only get the main ingredient is from, like, the star anise flower or something like that, and it's, like, extremely hard to get hold of, and 90% of the production is used for that, and it's one of those things where... But that's why guys like Craig Venter and stuff with Cellular Genomics and these other companies are trying to, you know, save the world.
Those big pharma companies always trying to save the world just so they can turn a profit. Way to go, big pharma.
Yeah.
Thanks for saving our lives just to throw us into slavery, jerks.
I'm going to get acupuncture on my eyeballs, and then I'm going to eat a nectarine that came from an equal opportunity co-op.
You've changed.
Take my homeopathic remedy.
You've changed.
Good night, everybody. It's been weird.
Want to sponsor the podcast? Do you have $30? If so, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor and you can have Justin say whatever you want. He's a trained ape.